Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Ukrainian units are on the Russian side of the Dnipro River. Let's find out why that is significant. Joseph Lindsley joining us from Ukraine. Hello, good morning. I guess good afternoon to you, Joseph.
Bob, good afternoon from Kyiv. And we just finished a several hours of nationwide air raid alarm because the Russian MiG jets were up in the air. Those jets are capable of carrying the supersonic, the hypersonic missiles. But again, now it's 55 days, almost 56 days without a major nationwide Russian missile strike upon Ukraine, which I continue to believe needs to be the headline. But indeed, another major piece of news is what the Ukrainians have been able to do crossing the Dnipro River. So the Dnipro flows through Kyiv. It starts in Russia, and it flows down to Kyiv. It actually passes. It comes very close to Chernobyl in the north of Ukraine, and then cuts through the city of Kyiv, and it flows all the way down to the Black Sea. Not long before it enters the Black Sea, it passes through the city of Kherson, which the Russians had occupied for many months of 2022. And then now the Ukrainians have they're on the right bank of the Dnipro, but the Russians are on the left bank. And when the counteroffensive began, by all accounts, it seemed to begin in early June or late May, the Russians, that's when they destroyed the Novokolkovka Dam, which is on the Dnipro River. And many people think that that disrupted Ukraine's counteroffensive plans. And surely it shook things up. And, you know, people in towns and villages in that region in southern Ukraine are still without running water. They've just adapted and they have water points thanks to international aid and Ukrainians. There's still significant damage because of the destruction of that dam. Upriver, it still looks like a desert in many places. But now we've seen and we've been hearing sort of tricklings of this information since the weekend that Ukrainians have been the Ukrainian military has been using boats, especially under cover of fog, to cross through the Dnipro at that point. It's pretty wide there. It's very marshy. There's a lot of islands, but there's more and more evidence that they've actually are establishing a presence on the left bank of the river and that the Russians in that region in the south are on the run. Meanwhile, we still have very intense fighting in the east in that town of Avdiivka near the city of Donetsk, which the Russians have occupied since 2014. And the Russians, even though there have not been any major nationwide missile attacks, the Russians are using their artillery and short-range missiles to pound places along near the front lines. For example, there's a little town, Selodova, which I actually visited and where I interviewed people last summer. And the Russians sent missiles there last night into apartment buildings and caused significant destruction. So we still see Russian terrorism, but we do see this period of we could maybe say Russian logistical weakness. And as I said yesterday, one of the clearest voices on this, General Ben Hodges, who was a commander of American forces in Europe during his career, he's now retired. You know, he's one of the voices saying this is the time to get Ukraine everything they need, because the Russian, and really, if you look, the problem is, it seems, for the Russians regarding their navy in the Black Sea, the headquarters of the navy is in Sevastopol in Crimea. That's where logistics are. But the navy is now dispersed, and much of it, the Russians have moved their navy much further away to Novorossiysk, which is on mainland Russia. It's near the nation of Georgia on the opposite side of the Black Sea. And so it's been very difficult for Russians to coordinate attacks from the Black Sea. And also today, Ukrainian intelligence said that in the past week, Russia has begun a huge multi-vectored attack on Ukrainian society to create despair and chaos. And, you know, this is kind of keeping with what I don't see that actually working here, but I see it working in the Western media. As we talked about yesterday, the negative headlines about Ukraine. And if you look at, and it's the same story, I think, with Hamas. You know, you have to remember, if Hamas wants to win and defeat Israel, if Russia wants to defend, to win and defeat Ukraine, they will do everything they can. I mean, they've already shown they're willing to, you know, to rape women, to chop people up, to kill children. to do all kinds of horrible things. So lying is not beyond them. You know, lying is, if they can do that stuff, they certainly can tell lies. And whenever they're in a weak spot, no wonder we're going to see more and more propaganda trying to pretend that things are very, very bad for Ukraine when in fact, it's exactly the opposite.
Mm-hmm. We cannot let what's going on in Gaza distract us from the important story of the war in Ukraine. And I was reading, and tell me if this is true, Joseph, that not too long ago, Hamas leaders were welcomed in Moscow.
Yeah, in fact, Bob, that was I think it was a week after Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th. They were welcomed in Moscow, and then the Russians and Hamas met in Tehran. So this is, you know, I think it's more than not letting Hamas distract from Ukraine. It's actually proactive, you know, for American leaders and Western leaders to proactively pay attention and realize that those forces are working together. Not only do they have similar tactics, what Hamas did to the Israelis on October 7th, the Russians were doing every day, especially for those first 2 or 3 months of the full-scale invasion. But when they thought they could get away with it, they were doing that in the Kyiv suburbs and many other parts of Ukraine. So in their style and tactics and inhumanity, but actually they're directly collaborating and working together. And we see similar tactics trying to hold the world hostage. Russia holds the world hostage by saying, you know, if you anger us too much, we'll go nuclear. And Hamas says, well, if you anger us too much, we'll kill our civilians, as we see what they're trying to do in these hospitals. And you know, it's always the same. I mean, we can never trust anything that Hamas says. We can never trust anything that Russia says. But I see quite the opposite sort of, you know, people sort of equate in the press and in the West statements from those regimes and statements from free societies. If we keep doing that, we're going to have a problem solving this.
Mm-hmm.
I would say there's a curious thing that is, and I don't have much information about this, but as pieces are moving around, Ukrainians are talking about that, you know, President Zelensky's equivalent of his chief of staff, Andriy Yermak, is in Washington. And this isn't weird to a lot of people because he's being sort of treated as a political leader, even though he's just a chief of staff. There are some maneuverings happening there, something to pay attention to. We don't know much about it. And then speaking of strange maneuverings, there's a new book, a Polish book out by a Polish journalist called, I will mispronounce his name, Zbigniew Parafinowicz. And the book is called, in translation, Poland at War. And he interviewed many high-level Polish officials in the military, in the president's office, and also Ukrainian officials, and it was telling the story of what happened in the early days, weeks, months of Russia's full-scale invasion. I spoke this morning with my Polish sources, who I trust. They said they trust this guy and the sources in his book. And two of the key things he said, when Russia invaded on February 24th, 2022, there were Polish special forces that happened to be in the Kyiv suburbs training. As they've been trading since 2014, since Russia took the Crimean Peninsula, and they stayed there secretly to gather intel. I'd heard this for a while, not just Polish special forces, but also from other major world powers happened to be there. And they didn't. They stayed. They didn't fight. They couldn't fight, but they stayed to observe. And so we had sort of this level of intrigue. But then, very interestingly, especially as we look now, you know, with say General Hodges. And other voices saying, why in this moment of Russian logistical weakness does the West not send long-range missiles immediately to Ukraine? And it was the same story in those early days of the full-scale invasion. According to this book, the Poles were asking the Americans, let's send heavy equipment to Ukraine. Washington was reluctant and refusing in those first days and weeks. They wanted to see which way they went. And so extraordinarily, the Poles took 10 MiG fighter jets and they dismantled them and they left them in the forest near the Ukrainian border and informed the Ukrainians where they could find the pieces of these jets. So the Ukrainians snuck over, got the pieces and brought them over to Ukraine and reassembled them.
Wow. Always interesting insights and points that certainly make sense from Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. We'll talk tomorrow. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Bob. Till tomorrow.